Hello and welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Monday, November 1st, 2021. I'm Maggie Lake, and with me today is Katie Stockton, founder of Fair Lead Strategies. A quick snapshot before we jump in. The market's relatively quiet on this first trading day of the new month ahead of what is potentially some market-moving events this week, including central bank policy meetings, an OPEC meeting, and U.S. non-farm payrolls, to mention just a few. The big political headline coming out today, not from Scotland, where COP26 is taking place, but instead from D.C., where the Treasury Department, Fed, and other regulators urge lawmakers to let them regulate stablecoin issuers, and West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin rejecting calls for a speedy passage of the proposed infrastructure bill. So let's get into it. Hey, Katie, great to have you back with us.
Hi, Maggie. Good to be back.
So before we jump in and unpack some of these different issues and talk across markets, why don't you just remind some viewers who may be new to joining us a little bit on your background and what your strategy is when it comes to approaching these markets?
You know, I'm a technician, and really in the pure sense of the word, I look at charts alone, but I really believe technical analysis is a perfect complementary discipline. So we publish research on a subscription basis, and our subscribers really are all over the map in terms of their composure. We have institutional subscribers. We have folks that are just day trading, you name it. And we can kind of service them by covering the markets from a technical perspective. Ideally, then they can take that information and cross-reference it with what they're doing on their end, whether it's fundamental, macro, political. Our background at Fair Lead Strategies, I started in early 2018 after spending over 20 years on Wall Street, primarily in a sell side research capacity. I was the chief technical strategist at BTIG most recently, which means that I was covering equities, primarily US equities, from a top down perspective, using technical analysis, and then doing a lot of idea generation from a bottom up technical perspective. Yeah. Our methodology, as much as just about the charts, and we do use a lot of indicators. So indicators are a big part of our process. These are mathematically based gauges that help us understand not only what the prevailing trends are, but when they might be turning around.
Yeah, I think it's so helpful to have that, especially now, because what we're seeing, not volatility in terms of the indicators or the VIX, but there are a lot of headlines coming out, and a lot of people are trying to really maintain some discipline when it comes to not getting married to their narrative or not getting overwhelmed by the emotion, how they feel around any trade. We've had a lot of questions about that. We've had a lot of questions coming in from the audience in terms of trading strategies and trying to get a little micro on that. So it's so helpful, I think, to have these conversations. So let's start with U.S. equities, and maybe broadly, just sort of tell me how you're feeling, because, you know, we know that September is a tough month for stocks, and then things tend to get a little more positive, a little better toward the end of the year. But I'm hearing a lot of people sound concerned and maybe like they're looking for a turn, or they're really worried about those nice gains that are showing on their books kind of eroding into year end. And we know no one likes that. So how are you feeling generally about the U.S. equity market?
You know, I'm sensing the same thing from my conversations, that folks have done pretty well this year, even last year, and they're feeling nervous, not just about a pullback or a correction, about the major turnaround. And we just don't see that in our work yet. We can talk about the long-term setup, but more importantly, for now into year end, we really only have bullish developments. And I'll show you here on a chart of the S&P 500 that's sort of near and dear to our hearts in terms of the indicators that are pictured. We have a breakout to new highs, and that breakout yields a measured move projection of 47.68. So the breakout was just confirmed last week, and for confirmation, we require a couple of daily closes above a short-term level. So indeed, we got that. And assuming the trajectory, the trend that began off the May low, which wasn't a major low, sort of continues or forges higher with the S&P 500, we can get to this 100% extension of this 47.68 level. And even though it does seem aggressive to us in terms of the percentage upside from here to there, it does dictate a bullish bias for the coming weeks or the near term. And of course, the market's into this like seasonally strong period coming off of a corrective low in October. October is known as a bear killer type month, where you tend to get downdrafts that are then discover buyers in October. And indeed, that's what we saw last month. Now I can't believe it's already November. And that followed a big pullback in September. That was really substantial, probably the most substantial, even from a bottom-up perspective, than we'd seen in about a year.
So, you know, it's a lot of times we look at the indexes, they're really dominated by a couple of big names. People I know are really kind of curious, who's going to lead? If we are seeing that, and it does seem like seasonally that uptrend is going to stay intact, where's the leadership going to come from? Are we seeing a change in leadership on the cards?
Mega caps have certainly been a source of sort of long time upside leadership since we saw the market bottom back around the COVID low in March 2020. And we're still seeing the same. I mean, we're seeing them maintain these long-term uptrends. And I'll show you that in absolute terms using an index actually based on the FANG plus Microsoft stocks. And you can just see the uptrend in that index, and it's maintained itself. Recently, we've seen a little fall off in terms of relative strength. So if you look at that index versus the S&P 500 in this ratio, it's been more directionless. And that has not held back the major indices. You saw the new high from the S&P 500. So at the same time as they've not really exhibited upside leadership of late, we've had very strong breadth behind the market. And for breadth, we just mean that more stocks are going up on up days. They're actually participating in the rally, if not also exhibiting upside leadership. So breadth has been pretty strong. The FANG stocks are collectively participating. We still have upside leadership from Microsoft, from Google. To a lesser degree, we've seen Facebook, of course, see a corrective phase. We've seen, or Meta,
going to get used to that. This is the jury's out, right? Even when we call it FANG, nobody likes the replacement yet. And everyone's going to wonder, are we just going to continue to call it Meta Facebook? You know, that we're going to hang on to that phase.
I'm still catching up on Alphabet too. So that would be my next point, is that Alphabet has certainly been a relative performer. The Amazon has been more neutral, as we all well know, but it still has maintained its long-term uptrend and has good support nearby. Netflix has been on a tear. Nvidia looks fantastic. Tesla, we really just can't fight the momentum there. And that has a relatively fresh long-term breakout that gets it close to 1370 based on that same discipline of a measured move projection. So all of these taken together, we expect more contribution from the mega caps, if not also upside leadership. And I think that's important to the major indices in a mature uptrend. But at the same time, the breadth is there. So I don't think that it doesn't mean stock selection isn't important, but it means that people are probably feeling some success in the market right now because most names are going higher with the major indices. This is a chart here of Tesla, and I can show you the breakout above what was former resistance around 900. When you see a breakout and breakouts in general that are getting this nice immediate upside follow through, that's indicative of a strong tape, and earnings season always generates more breakouts and breakdowns. We're seeing more upside follow through on the breakouts than on the breakdowns, seeing downside follow through. So I think that's encouraging, again, supportive of, say, maybe the next 6 to 8 weeks of upside. But after that, we do see some signs of exhaustion that we may have to contend with in Q1.
So that's a really important bookmark there. So that we're seeing the trend, because people have a hard time, given the gains we've seen in some of these stocks, some people, you can understand why they're nervous, just thinking, can this possibly continue? You're saying yes, but you have to be careful on your time horizon here.
I think it's always the case. We always, when we're analyzing the charts using our indicators, we're looking at monthlies, weeklies, and dailies. In fact, you can see it on my launch pad here. You're seeing simultaneous timeframes on the screen. And we do that because we want the long-term context, the intermediate term, and the short term. And those all inform our biases. And sometimes when it's not as strongly trending of a tape, that's when you really have to get a little bit more short term in your positions, because you can't be as committal to something that may go through this kind of backing and filling type of process.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
You mentioned the breath, Katie, which I think is important because some people had pointed out, listen, you can say the index, you know, if you look at a certain index, it's up, but they're so dominated by these big names. And maybe there had been some correction underneath that people hadn't been picking up. If the breath is improving, you know, does big cap tech or mega cap tech need support from other leadership coming? I've heard a lot of people talking about financials, a lot of people talking about energy. Are there any other sectors that you see positive price action that you think could sort of join in the leadership here?
I mean, certainly. Yeah, we have overweight recommendations right now for financials and also consumer discretionary and now technology. And that's a new upgrade after having been equal weight technology for some time. We think those are great leadership sectors for financials. And I'll bring up the chart here. This is a chart of breadth that you're seeing on the screen now. And you can see how this breadth measure, which is the cumulative advanced decline line, bottomed around its 200-day moving average and has been forging higher. As it pertains to financials, of course, we have to relate that back to 10-year treasury yields, which have really seen some strong up moves of late. And that has contributed to financial sector, especially regional banks and banks more broadly have really garnered some relative performance there. And with that relative performance, this is XLF or the financial spider. You've seen pretty widespread breakouts. Some may be stretched from a short-term perspective, but we see that as just a pause to likely refresh these intermediate-term uptrends. Breakouts to us are some of the most actionable takeaways in the charts. And we're seeing breakouts also in technology looking deeper than those that comprise the FANGs or the mega caps. We're seeing a lot of breakouts in software and semiconductors are even starting to break out. So we find some spots of strength there too. And if you look at the consumer discretionary ETF or any kind of benchmark in that space, you'll see some really good up moves that have accelerated of late. So this is the kind of move, this is the consumer discretionary spider or XLY that you see, you know, it's okay to chase sometimes because when you get these breakouts, as hard as it is to buy into strength at times, it's often the right thing to do because we've been just seeing good follow through on them.
Yeah. You know, given we talked a moment ago about the concerns, whether it's driven by the fact that, you know, we've seen such big gains and people are worried, you know, about extending them or kind of chasing that last leg or the supply chains. You know, there's just a host of worries that you can look at. Would you, given what you're seeing in the price action, are you surprised that worry isn't showing up in the VIX at all?
Well, yeah, I know the VIX for us is exactly what you refer to as like a gauge of market sentiment. We like the VIX because it's a transactional gauge of market sentiment. A lot of technicians have kind of grown up with or learned over the course of their careers to pay attention to the investor polls. But we've always found more value in gauges that are not asking people how they're thinking about the market, but how are they actually positioned?
Right.
And the VIX does show that fear or lack thereof in the marketplace. I think the VIX is a great risk metric, and we have very well-defined levels right now to watch. So we've been publishing on this 15-ish support level down at previous lows. You could even draw back to some former resistance. And then on the upside, we've refined the trading range that we've seen for the past several months to an upper boundary of right around 25. So very easy levels to watch for folks at home. And a breakout above 25 would indicate that we're getting out of this low volatility regime that has characterized the market and the major indices for so long into something different. And it doesn't necessarily mean to be different bearish for the S&P, but different we could get into an environment that has more corrective phases, mm-hmm. more limited upside progress. Some folks might actually welcome that as some volatility that they can take advantage of, or at least an easier way to take advantage of it from a bottom-up perspective. But it does go back to getting forced into maybe more of a short-term bias if we were to see that VIX above 25. So that's our risk metric. And you can see how that would change the composure of this chart and get it above a resistance level.
Yeah. So when you see the VIX so low like this, does that reinforce your feeling that there's upside, or do you worry that there's too much complacency?
You know, if we're down by 11 or 12, something even lower than current levels, and started to show signs of downside exhaustion there, that's where I'd start to think about complacency. Mm-hmm. As it stands, it's really been almost more of a neutral takeaway that it's been providing within this range. So we have to think of, you almost can't look at a specific level and say that's where there's complacency in the market. You have to think of it more as like a trending gauge. Where we actually highlighted to clients a breakdown in the VIX in March, and it felt strange to say, well, that's actually, market bullish because it's, getting down to those levels where it's bottomed in the past. But indeed, it kind of preserved that low volatility cycle and got us just into a new range. So I think it's a matter of evaluating breakouts and breakdowns and then looking for signs of either downside or upside exhaustion, of which we really have neither.
That's a really helpful distinction, because I think it's easy for us to hear when you hear about it sitting at these lows that it's too good to be true. So it's interesting to look at it with more nuance. I think is very helpful, and I think we'll kind of put people's minds at ease sometimes when they see that first headline. So one of the things I think that's been worrying people, we've seen the inflation story, right? And it's feeding into Fed, it's feeding into interest rates. And it's, by the way, one that is it's not even a story, it's a debate, because a lot more people on the inflation side of thing, that is inflation side is here to stay. And it's kind of, we're looking at a period now of renewed higher prices. Not everyone agrees. What does that mean? What are you seeing when it comes to crude oil? Because we do have that OPEC meeting coming up this week.
Yeah, there's been a long-term turnaround in commodity prices, and it's broadly speaking, not just crude oil. In fact, I would argue it's even more pronounced in a way in natural gas prices these days. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a lasting turnaround by the way the monthly chart's set up, and the implications for inflation, you can take it as for face value, right? I think that we've seen a series of long-term breakouts. And this is crude oil, the generic contract on a monthly chart. You see the uptrend here off of negative territory. And most recently, a breakout above what was former resistance on the chart from 2018, around $77 per barrel. That breakout acts as a catalyst for higher prices for crude oil. And this is a long-term takeaway, but next resistance on our chart is around $110 per barrel. It doesn't mean it gets there straight away. It's a likely, something that's dotted by pullbacks and what have you, but we'll use the short-term gauges to try to navigate through that. So I think with the lack of resistance between here and there, it just suggests that the uptrend should persist over the long term. And we're seeing that broadly speaking, as mentioned, in the commodity arena. And with that, we've gotten some rotation into, of course, the energy sector, which is one that we were overweight, and now we're currently equal weight just to navigate through some consolidation phase. But we've also seen some promising rotation into some cyclical. So even if inflations are a fear here, there's ways to find stocks to leverage that as a trend, as a way, instead of just letting it create fear and keeping you out of the marketplace.
Do you see a floor for oil prices? Are we in a higher range in a medium term or for crude oil? I'm assuming we're looking at WTI, not NYMEX, right? Not Brent as well.
This is WTI still. It's a generic contract. For the short term time horizons, we tend to look at the front month. But what this shows here are those DeMarc indicators that I know you've showcased on air before. And the DeMarc indicators would support, let's say, 3 to 4 weeks of consolidation for crude oil, but within the context of the long-term uptrend. Mm-hmm. I love this combination of moving averages. You can see the 20, 35, and 50 period moving averages on this weekly bar chart are all pointing higher, and the uptrend is still supported by the MACD, which is a great trend following gauge. So still has momentum, long-term, intermediate-term, some signs of exhaustion, but they're more short-term in nature. And it's those pauses or consolidation phases that allow the uptrends to persist a little longer than otherwise. Mm-hmm. Where we would get a little less constructive would be either with a breakdown, with a confirmed overbought downturn, or with some kind of, rollover in one of these important moving averages.
We have a question from Anthony, viewer. Can you comment on the other indicators you're using on your charts? And I think he's referring to the lower indicators, the lower part of your chart.
Of course. Yeah. So this is the MACD indicator, moving average convergence divergence method, a very popular and standard issue technical indicator that most folks can access online for free. And then the histogram here is the spread between those two lines that comprise it. So that shows you the contraction and divergences a little bit differently in their presentation. So we find a lot of value in that. Of course, you see the moving averages of price, of which that's just a matter of preference what you're seeing there. But we just like to look at certain combinations, not really big on crossovers and moving averages, but rather which direction are they pointing? Is price above or below? The DeMarc indicators you see here as well. We also have another chart template that we've shown on air today, and it shows the cloud model, which is also known as Ichimoku. It's the shaded area on the chart, a really nice way to understand what the prevailing trend is and also support and resistance. And we also show the stochastic oscillator here. So this is stuff that all, you know, makes up part of our process.
And another, we obviously have some technical analysis fans watching, because another one's asking, do you use put call ratios as a sentiment indicator?
I used to. We highlight in our daily report a whole host of different market internal measures that are on our radar. And we're looking for extremes, because we found that when they're not at extremes, they're not really that informational. So we're looking for inflection points to be designated by extremes. The reason I got away from the put calls, and maybe it was just more my own biases, in 2008, they really just flashed these major extremes, and they did so way, way, way too early. So they burned me to the extent that I didn't want to come back to them, and I found some gauges that I felt like were a little bit more reliable. I'm quite sure there's plenty of value in them if you're using them the right way, but personally, I got away from it because of that one experience. What we have found to be a good discipline is to look at several different market internal measures, whether you're looking at sentiment or breadth or leadership, volume, because that way it almost like diversifies the way you're evaluating the market internals. And I think there's some safety in that.
Which makes complete sense. And, in that major event period, a lot was put to the test, and important to take a look at what worked, what didn't, where the shortcomings were. I think as you move forward, you don't make the same mistakes again. You mentioned commodities in general, and we have seen massive action in that market. I know a lot of our audience is in that asset class in one shape or another. I want to reference a conversation I had on Friday. I spoke to Chris Verone of Strategus Research Partners, and he had some very, very interesting things to say about copper. Let's have a listen.
I think the most important thing in our entire conversation today that I can tell you and tell your viewers is that positioning today looks very, very different than what it looked like in January, February, March, right? If I was on any call or in any client meeting in the first quarter of this year, you would hear the same things. You would hear, Chris, I like small cap cyclicals, metals, financials, and I hate the dollar and I hate bonds, right? That was the consensus positioning at the start of the year. That has changed pretty dramatically as 2021 has carried on. And you see that in this chart. The bottom panel that we're showing you here is the weekly CFTC net long versus net short data. So you went from a really, really extreme net long position in copper earlier in the year to really a more modest position today. And, you know, copper's firmed here. It's corrected the last week or so. I think it's very, very viable as it's come back to support. These copper stocks are all starting to firm. And importantly for us, look at the ratio between copper and gold, right? That is our barometer for how the market perceives the economy. Copper, industrial metals, still outperforming precious metals. I think that's a good sign for cyclicality broadly.
Love it. Again, that was Chris Varone of Strategus. If you have not had a chance to watch that full interview, I really encourage you to check it out. He has a lot of great trading ideas, trading strategies, and quite a few of them are sort of against consensus, and it's across a range of assets, has things to say about China growth, about QQQs, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So definitely have a look. That's available to Plus and Pro members. So Katie, what are you watching in the metal space? Is copper on your radar as well?
Always. I mean, you know, it's a gauge of sort of economic performance. In fact, we mentioned it in our morning note as having pulled back. It did this sort of round trip in the month of October, a breakout earlier in the month, and then a pullback. And I think it could be related in part to what you're seeing on this chart here. It's a monthly view. If you go back, you see some resistance drawn all the way back to the 2011 high, which, mind you, is where we're getting at least one place we're getting that 110 level for crude oil prices. So a very natural place for some consolidation to develop. It kind of prevents that upside follow through that we like to see to confirm turnarounds. But indeed, we want to give it the benefit of the doubt. From a short-term perspective, that pullback that we saw towards the end of October has now generated a short-term oversold condition. It's done so above the 50-day moving average, which you see in green here, and also above cloud-based support. So we still have a bullish intermediate-term bias on copper prices. There are challenges in terms of resistance, but we expect that uptrend and turnaround based going back to the May high to essentially reassert itself following this volatility that we've seen.
All right. So it sounds like you're in agreement, because I think Chris, the title of that chart Chris had was "The Street Is Not Nearly Long Enough Copper." So I thought that was very thought provoking.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We have a question coming in from Bunker Hunker. I love the name. Could you provide your thoughts, insights on the direction of the dollar as it seems to be range bound, indicating neither pending inflation or deflation?
You know, we follow the dollar index like everything else from sort of multiple time frames. And if you look at this weekly chart, I think this is really interesting. You can see a big double bottom formation. We're not big on price patterns, but when you see something this clean, it's something we do talk about. And yet the dollar index is right up into some resistance. You can see that based on a Fibonacci retracement level here. You can see it based on the cloud. So it's hardly free and clear of resistance. But this double bottom formation combined with what we have on this monthly chart, which is a MACD buy signal or improved long-term momentum, does to us give the dollar a more bullish or strengthening bias for next year. Some people might think that's bullish, some people might not, but bullish for the dollar at least. So looking for the strengthening off of that turnaround that we've seen this year.
It's funny that you say that. It's just so true. It depends on what you're in. If you see a strengthening dollar, what you're watching for to know whether that makes sense, it's going to be bullish or not. Tim asking, what's on your radar in terms of silver?
You know, silver and gold, right? I love the idea of having a portion of your portfolio exposed to these commodities because they aren't highly correlated to others, right? So you're getting some non-correlation there to some degree and some defensiveness at times, not always reliable. But right now they're certainly out of favor. So I think, you know, we've seen some signs of life. Let me show you on the front month silver contract. some signs of life on the daily chart. You see the breakout above the 50-day moving average, some follow through off of that. So like copper, we are looking for it to sort of resume that turnaround. And also, if you look at where support is, it is holding support. But it's harder to make a strong case for it than it is for the commodities that have good upside momentum. And the same can be said for gold.
Speaking of non-correlation, I have to ask you about Bitcoin. We did see, I mentioned at the top, some headlines coming out. Again, this is not a done deal. This is a recommendation from regulators. We know they've been itching to get their hands on that market, and they're talking about stable coins. But still, what are you seeing in terms of Bitcoin? We see that we saw that huge turnaround and comeback. What's the price action look like now as we head toward the end of the year?
You know, I take no issue with the current price action in terms of like a pause within the uptrend. The uptrend is still intact, even after this corrective phase in Bitcoin from earlier this year. If you look at the cloud model as a gauge of support, you can see it was left intact during that corrective phase. So while it was dramatic in percentage terms and certainly painful if you rode it lower, the turnaround preserved the long-term uptrend. So we don't take any issue with the current consolidation, noting that it's occurring right below the all-time high. So again, a very natural place for it to take pause. We saw Ether reach a new all-time high. So it's kind of in the same position where it's testing some final resistance on the chart. For a breakout to be confirmed, we want to see a couple of good weekly closes above that threshold. And then you can see a measured move projection here gets it to close to 90,000 if that's a confirmed breakout. And the time horizon on that projection would be something in 6 to 12 month range. And certainly when you think about that, it does hold some promise. It's not going to be without volatility, of course, on a short-term basis. But our indicators still mostly point higher, especially if you're looking from a long-term perspective. And this all follows what was a major base breakout in late 2020. So we think that sets the tone for higher prices for Bitcoin and for even with breakouts developing some outperformance from some of the altcoins if you can pick the right ones.
Wow. Katie, we have a question coming and I'm going to combine them sort of and start. We're going to squeak another minute out here, but Fred asking about the Russell. I know a lot of people have been looking for that for a breakout. I know Chris was to return to that. He was long recommending long Russell, short QQQ, but what do you think about the Russell? And then let's go right from there to go out a little bit more on your time horizon, because you mentioned something earlier about a short-term view, but then being a bit more cautious or worried. I think I heard you said as we head into next year. So let's do the Russell first, and then give me your perspective as we turn the corner on the year.
It was a really big day for the Russell 2000. As you know, it was up almost 2.7%. So a big day for it. And with that up move, it actually shrugged off a short-term overbought DeMarc signal from last week. We see that as a positive. But even more importantly, we have, as of if it kind of closes near current levels at the end of this week, we have a new crossover in this weekly MACD indicator, which reflects intermediate-term momentum. So despite it being range-bound still, this MACD had been negative since late March. So what it supports is a breakout to new highs, resistance super well-defined here, 2360 for the Russell 2000. I believe the level's just shy of 235 for the IWMs. And if you saw a breakout above that level, that's more decisive in the same way that we're looking for confirmation elsewhere. The measure moves are super impressive. Or even just taking the width of the range and projecting it from the breakout point makes a compelling case for some upside follow through. And we're getting into a time of the year where you tend to see a little tax loss selling lead to then this relief rally that benefits the Russell 2000 names typically the most. You get this so-called January effect, where December into sometimes early January, you get a little outperformance from these small caps, which I think is interesting.
And then just give us are you feeling like this? I know that it sounds like you're positive and expect more gains as we head to the close of the year. As we turn the corner, how are you feeling? Do we need to recalibrate as we head into the new year? Are you looking that far out?
Well, we had been neutral. We just moved to neutral after having been bullish for about 14 months on our long-term S&P 500 bias. And the reason for that was primarily based on a comparison to the current environment and late 2017. Based on the DeMarc indicators in part, we have a new sell signal as of 2 months ago, based on one of the DeMarc indicators, and that was reminiscent last of late 2017. We also have a prolonged overbought reading in our stochastic oscillator here, and a downtick in momentum that reminded us of this period, sort of the January to February 2018 period. So it likens the current environment to an environment that gave way to more of a range-bound setup with a lot more short-term volatility, not a bear market, but something that was pretty difficult from a trading perspective if you look at this 2018 period. So we feel more comfortable being neutral beyond year-end, and yet we'll probably inform subscribers of when to sell once we have some kind of signs of upside exhaustion, not just on the long-term chart, but also intermediate and short-term, because it can take time for some of these longer-term signals to actually make a real impact on the chart. So the signals, you know, may not really manifest themselves within the next month or two, but ultimately tend to take their toll and lead to a corrective phase. So that's what we're mentally preparing for. But we'd keep in mind that the corrective phase can occur from higher levels. So for now, we want to just stay with what's working momentum-wise.
Sounds fantastic. As you can all tell, I'm fighting a cold, and I think that's it for my voice. It's it for Katie's time with us. So thank you so much, Katie, for being with us. Ash will be here tomorrow with Tony Greer. In the meantime, the conversation continues on the exchange. Take care and good luck out there.